Today on Rambling About Cars, what's better, retro or modern? We actually just drove the classic Shelby Cobra in a couple iterations, and we have some opinions on that. But then we also have to talk about Audi. Oh, Audi, there's some bad news coming out today from Audi. Maybe not bad, maybe good. We've got a lot to cover. It's going to be retro-tastic, so classy Canyon Carvers. It's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, and you know Mr. Chris Bruce across the way, and we're not alone today.
We've got Clint Simone with us. And real quick, I guess I got to do the elephant in the room. Yeah, I know I've got two Band-Aids on my face. Quick story, had only had an old razor, went to shave. First thing, cut myself open. Looks gross under here. I'm embarrassed by it, but here I am. Clint, welcome to the show.
I mean, thank you for that. That's man. Woo. I've done this a few times now, and that is without a doubt the most particular introduction I've ever been a part of. So thank you for that warm welcome. Always happy to be here.
If it makes the viewers feel any better, I'm still suffering from the bacon-wrapped strawberry cream cheese stuffed jalapenos I had yesterday. So my little office.
Disgusting.
My little office.
We need a different episode just on your food choices.
The strawberry with the jalapeno and the bacon. Oh, you have no idea. You have no idea. But
I don't want an idea.
Speaking of no idea, how about we start this off with just a little bit of Audi news that came in today before we get into the really good stuff. And I promise we have some really, really good stuff courtesy of Clint and senior editor Brett Evans. You guys did something amazing. But as with life, before you get to the amazing stuff, how
like
about
they say,
Audi?
You don't start the show with a showstopper, so we're going to start it with a little bit of Audi news. Nothing groundbreaking, but I guess kind of sad in a certain way. So Audi, for the 2022 model year, the Audi TT RS is going away. It will no longer be available in America. Audi's clear, though, it will still be available in other international markets, just Americans won't get it. And to be more clear, the TT and TTS will still be available in the U.S. Only the RS is going away.
But, really?
Yeah.
Sorry, I should know what we're talking about going into this, but what the hell? Really.
Well, we don't, so I mean, welcome to the crowd, man.
But to say farewell, Audi is doing a heritage edition of the TTRS. It is available in five colors that they say are inspired by the original Audi Quattro, or as they put in their thing, the Ur Quattro, which I had a whole discussion in our Slack chat about how stupid that is. But maybe we can get there eventually. But yeah, so five colors, some special leather. They're going for $81,450 plus a $1,045 destination fee. So they're pretty expensive. Just for comparison, a standard 2022 TTRS is $73,200. So right about 10 grand more. But they're only bringing 50 of them into the United States and only 10 of each color combo. So they are going to be rare.
They're going to be rare, but I mean, I think maybe you kind of just revealed maybe accidentally why it's disappearing in America. I mean, that's it's a neat car, but that's quite a chunk of change for that car. I mean, would you guys, if you had that much to spend, are you thinking Audi TTRS? Because I'm not.
No, not at all. It's that weird generation of Audi. TTRS is the only one, and I guess the R8, that doesn't have any sort of tech in the middle of the car. Everything is the driver cockpit in front of you, which I just found to be so strange. If your passenger wants to change the radio station or anything, they can't see what they're doing. It's just all in front of the driver. That has nothing to do with the driving credentials. It's an amazing five-cylinder engine. It sounds like a baby V10. Super cool car. It just never stole my heart in the way that I think some other people it did.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, full disclosure, I've never had a chance to drive the RS, but I mean, aside from that engine sound, I mean, there's nothing like a five cylinder. And I'm sorry, when you say five cylinder Audi, I mean, the history there with the original Quattro, the UR Quattro, the Ur Quattro, to kind of rub Bruce the wrong way there a little bit. I mean, you can't just not just envision like the Killer Bees, the rally cars of the 80s. Mm-hmm. That's the only appeal really that I would have going for the RS. And like you said, Clint, it's just not enough for me to give it a second glance. And I guess
RS3
a lot of people feel that way.
Gets all the attention. And there's a reason for that. The RS3 is just slightly better to drive, same powertrain, a little bit better in just about every way. And RS3 just got a brand new from the ground up situation there. We just recently drove it. So that car is the one that gets all the attention. TTRS, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah, it was a cool car. Of this generation, they never did a convertible, right? It was only ever a coupe. Am I mistaken there?
I don't think they ever did a TTRS convertible in this generation.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
It's kind of the weird thing about the TT is that when you dig down, it's still the same platform that's underneath a Golf, and there's only so much you can do to it. But they did a lot to it, and that kind of the engine is the star of the show. And you know, it's a cool car. These 50 people will get some cool stuff. I love the different interiors they're doing. The red and the blue interiors both look great on these Heritage
blue
editions.
Looks cool, but, yeah.
As we're going through some photos here, the next couple after this one, it'll actually be Audi included some images of the original Quattro in these colors that they're basing it off of. So you can see.
Can you slow the slideshow down here for this portion?
Of course I can. I've got all sorts of power.
You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people, and if you want to send me hate mail, you can send it to podcast.
Are you about to say you don't like this car?
I don't not like it.
Come on,
it's a cool car. I like the car. I just always thought that original the Quattro, the GT, come on, the proportions are a little wonky, right? It looks like there should be another set of doors back there. I mean, that's how long the back half of that car stretches on. I mean, it looks like there should be two more doors back there. And then it got even worse when they shortened it for for the World Rally Championship.
Oh, I got pictures of those too. Here you go.
But it's cool. Yeah, I mean that looks even more goofy. It's like I said, it's cool. I love it. I'm a huge rally fan, and that car changed the face of stage rally forever. But it does look a little wonky, guys. I'm sorry. It kind of does. I still rather have it than a TTRS.
Yeah, you're
just because, you know, I can pretend it's the 80s again, and we all know how much I love the 80s.
This happens every time we talk.
It does not happen every time we talk. Okay. Like 80-20 maybe.
So do we have anything else to say about the TTRS Heritage Edition? It's cool. It's nice that they're making it. They're only making 50 of them, 10 in each color, like I said.
So they're making 50. Yep. That means like 48 will be left in a year and a half or so.
No. I would buy 10 of the green ones.
Honestly, I don't know. I know they haven't been selling exactly like hotcakes. I don't know exactly what Audi's sales are for the TTRS. But you know, if they're just dropping it in the U.S. and they're keeping the TT, that's kind of telling that the sales aren't great. But I bet Audi sells every one of these. I mean, there's
50 cars. Yeah, they'll sell 50 cars.
There are going to be 50 Audi fans out there that want a piece of that. So
definitely.
Do we want to gloss over the other Audi news that popped up today?
Yeah, let's hit it real quick. Yeah,
we can hit it really quick. Our colleague Anthony Alanis wrote this one up here today. Basically, I don't know if it's really anything fantastic or new, but the Audi R8 successor most likely going to be all electric when it arrives. But the takeaway from this is that it doesn't necessarily mean the next R8 will be electric. The next R8 might not be an R8. That was kind of the crux that I pulled out of this write up here. I mean, the company confirmed R8 successor will be all electric, but they also just might put the R8 to bed and just leave it as the internal combustion everyday supercar that it was. I mean, that's kind of the crux of the news here. And it was just timely coming with the news of the TTRS. And I thought it was worthy of a little bit of discussion. Cause we've had similar discussions before on some other cars. Would Audi be better suited to just let the R8 die as it was, or continue it in a different form?
I think let it die. For, you know, the original R8, the thing that made it so special is that the R8 name was supposed to reference the R8 race car that just dominated endurance racing at a few years previous to that. And Audi doesn't compete in endurance racing anymore. So find a new name that has some connection to something. Let it die.
What do you think, Clint?
I think there's room for a flagship successor to this car. You can call it whatever you want, but the idea that they're moving it to all electric isn't shocking at all. They're pushing way hard on e-tron right now. The RS e-tron GT, the world's worst named car, is phenomenal. And Audi as a whole is starting to do electric very well, slowly and slowly. So the fact they're going to do a flagship supercar at the top of the range doesn't shock me at all.
We had an electrified R8. It's just nobody. It's almost like maybe a little ahead of its time, right?
I mean, it was basically a limited run thing that like barely happened. But the R8 with the V10 is that deserves a special place in all of our hearts forever and ever. So. I mean, honestly, some people have a soft spot for the V8 version, the 4.2, but at the same time, it should have just been V10 only from the beginning, even in that first generation. And of course, they swapped to it later on. They got rid of the V8 altogether, but that car, the V10, is just the coolest damn thing.
I don't know if I wholly agree, just because I think having the stepping stone between what had been the Gallardo at the time, because they were on the same platform, so you could get kind of a slightly less expensive, although a slightly less performance Gallardo. That's still kind of cool. And if you look, those cars today, they're getting towards like bargain status, like 50 grand-ish from what I'm seeing recently for a V8 R8. Like, you know, it's an older supercar, but
gosh,
I just realized I shot those photos.
These are your photos that we're looking at?
Yeah, realize it at first.
You'll definitely want to go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube. Go there, like, follow, subscribe, smash every single button you could find, because that helps us do more of this crazy content.
Yeah.
Where you can see Clint's photos and later on some of his video that we're going to talk about.
How about right now? Because there's not really much else to say about the R8.
Do we just want to jump into the really good stuff? Because
let's get the show started.
Let's jump into the really good stuff, because Clint gave me a little preview of this video the other day. And I told him I was just like jealous as hell, because you and Brett, you guys out in Southern California had a chance to drive the Super Performance. It's not technically a Shelby Cobra, but it's the modern, it's like the kit car Shelby Cobra.
Basically,
Super Performance has special permission to do.
They have special permission.
You know, I guess it would technically be an AC Cobra recreation if you're tracing it. Right,
you basically
back,
call
it
a licensed replica.
Sure,
I think would be. And the best it is. Way.
They have become like such the name for it that, you know, most people almost associate it hand in hand with the original, save for a huge price difference, obviously. But you know, we went to their facility in Southern California. They called us and said, hey, we'd love for you to come down. We just built this car. It has no engine. It has the powertrain from a Tesla Model S P100D. It's lighter than the V8 powered Cobra.
That's insane.
And it's completely lighter. Wild, and it's still a prototype. Do you want the keys to it for a day? And it didn't take long for us to say yes.
Yes.
We'd absolutely love to come say hi. And we did.
And we're watching some of this video now, and it's important to point out, before you two jump into the electric version, you take the gas version for a spin. And I mean, I don't think I've ever seen two people smile in the period of 8 minutes more than in this video, right?
As you would expect, for Brett and I both, a V8 powered Cobra is, it's got to be close to the top of our bucket list to drive. You know, like that was one of the cars I idolized as a kid. Everything's iconic, you know, where they're giving us the car and they're reminding us not to burn our legs on the side exhaust. And it's like, oh yeah, like all of it, it's awesome. So we start in the V8 and we're just having a ball. And then that was the context we sort of gave ourselves before we swapped into the electric one. And it's completely different and yet very similar at the same time.
Well, can you run us through? Go ahead, Bruce.
I got to ask, because I've watched this video already.
Yeah.
Did you not get to drive the gas one at all? Was that?
I did. I was nervous. Okay. I got to be honest with you. I've heard stories of the clutch pedals on those things. Like, you know, I can drive a manual. I can do all that. But everything about that, when I drive, here's my full disclosure. When I drive a manual transmission, it's a new model car that I'm reviewing. So I don't have a lot of experience driving a legitimate classic car with the manual transmission. And it was precarious. Like when Brett downshifted one time, the revs spiked high enough that the back end came out from under him. And he had a full save moment. And after that, you know, that was just as we were filming some runs with the car. I'm like, you know, this car is worth a lot more money than I am. I'm going to wade into this. So I did drive it at the end of the day.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure you got to drive it because you in the video are the one driving the electric version. And I guess I got to ask. Right. The corollary to that, did Brett get to drive the electric version as well?
Yeah. We both drove both versions throughout the day. But, okay, you know, good. Continuing with full disclosure, I was a chicken shit. I didn't drive the gas-powered one until the end of the day. I was truly afraid of it.
It can be daunting. Because, I mean, that's a light car.
Yeah, 2,400 pounds with that particular V8 when it was a Windsor V8 that was under the hood. And then the crazy part, you know, I could talk about this EV for days. The EV is lighter than the car with the V8. It's 2,300 pounds, 650 horsepower, and over 1,000 foot-pounds of torque in the EV.
Now,
like,
what's it?
It's torque limited, too. Like, it could make more torque, but they scaled it back just so it was controllable. That from the
It would just sit and spin. I mean, there's no formal traction control. There's no computers to slow down the flow of power. So it's too much. I mean, the only thing stopping the car from going completely ballistic is that it has massive section tires on the back of it. I believe it's 355, though I could be wrong. 335, maybe. They're big section rear tires, but that's it.
Were they bigger on the electric version than on the gas?
No, they're about the same size, actually.
Same on the gas?
It's pretty similar, like the size of the car, the dimensions of it, because they use the same chassis and everything. It really is just a different powertrain. This is all still the gas car, but the EV we hop to in just a minute.
Let me just get a quick summary here in case our listeners, and by our listeners, I mean me, missed it. What's the power on the gas version? You said that's a Windsor. That's like a 351, I think.
351, that's right.
351 stroke, like a 402, 3.
So it's close to 427 cubic inch, like the old one. What was the power on that?
I believe it was just over 400 horsepower.
400 horsepower, which sounds so, I won't say it sounds weak, but it's just like when you're talking like 500 and 600 horsepower, oh, 400, whatever. Dude, in a car that's 24.
And they have bigger engine options. That's not their 427 model. That's positioned below the 427. So
in a car that small, that lightweight, with that kind of power, and was that a 4-speed or a 5-speed manual?
Do you know? 5-speed, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. And yeah, like you said, it's such an old school feel. My Mustang is kind of that way. Is one of the reasons I wanted to get like the last of the 5.0s. It kind of has that old school feel. I've actually done some downshifts, even though the engine is considerably less powerful. I've done some downshifts where, okay, that's locking up the back because I spiked the revs a little too high. Was that clutch? I mean, is that something? And apologies for me nerding out here because the Cobra, this is one of my bucket list cars too. And I want to hear all about the gas one before we get to the electric. That transmission, I mean, was it synchronized pretty well? Did you have to try to rev match it on the downshifts? Because I just envision myself, because I rev match the Mustang all the time, the T5. I mean, it's not bad, but it's just like, if you want a downshift, just blip it. And I envision myself driving that car, just like rolling on the gas in second gear, upshifting into third, and then just letting off the gas, letting the revs drop a little bit, flip it, downshift it back into second, hear it pop, and then just do that again for like the next hour and a half.
You said roll, and that's the operative word here. If you punch it with too much, something's going to go wrong, and it's going to happen very quickly. You legitimately have to roll on the throttle, but that's how you immerse yourself in the full experience of the engine note. If you roll onto the throttle and let the revs climb quickly, but you know, that was the name of the game there. And the throw, the actual gear shift, you know, it's tilted like yay forward.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very strange experience shifting that car. I mean, I've really never driven a transmission like it. I know I sound like a bit of a noob here for anybody who does have a bunch of classic car experience, but it's completely foreign things that we drive today.
There's classic car experience, and I've driven a few classic cars, but Cobra is different. I mean, just for what you were describing, the way the transmission lever extends back the way it does, it feels so awkward.
And the clutch pedal is so left. It is the pedal box is, if you're the driver here, the pedal box is completely over here. You just have to contort yourself in ways that it just doesn't make sense, but it's fantastic.
So, Smith, I will point this out. So in our story, we were watching the video earlier, but in our story, we do have some specs. Okay. So 5.8 liter V8, like we said, it's a stroke 351. 400 horsepower, 400 pound-feet is the estimated output for that. For the electric version, 650 horsepower, 1,500 pound-feet of torque. And we, as we mentioned, that's a limited number. That it could be more. 32 kilowatt-hour battery. For the EV, 5-speed manual. And then, yeah, the surprising number, weight, 2,450 pounds for the one with the V8, 2,350 pounds for the EV, 100 pounds and 250 extra horsepower and four times basically? Yeah, 3-point-something times more torque.
Yeah, the torque curve too would be just completely flat. Different.
It'd just be,
it's just like pegged all the way. Yeah. Pegged.
The thing that's worth mentioning is like obvious. We say it in the video in actual VO. This is not for everybody. The Superformance built this knowing it's not for everybody. They're not trying to say this is the solution to resto mods. We're doing this forever and ever. They found a space. They took a chance, which I think is quite bold because nobody, you know, not everybody's going to love this. And this is for a specific customer. And I think they will sell these to very specific customers. And at the same time, they are almost completely full on orders for the next few years on the V8 versions that everybody else loves. So there's a car for everybody here, provided you have the money, which is a lot. But I give them credit because they faced internet trolls in the way of our content. They told us to come down and drive it. And it's really neat. It is far and away the most strange and exciting EV I've ever driven.
So speaking of price, though, and I know this is a one-off for right now. This is just, but did they talk about what it might cost if someone?
It'll be six figures.
One?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be over $100,000. They're still finalizing some fit and finish things. That's sort of a prototype with the display, how you shift the car. You actually put it into drive and reverse with that little center display. So it's all digital, which is kind of strange. And then they're working out the, I don't know how you want to say, definitely the final details with the Tesla powertrain. So they're estimating between 150 to 200 miles when it hits production. But range to me is the silliest thing to talk about here because this is a weekend runabout car. You know, I mean, if you want to take it on an extended road trip, then that should come into question. But as far as I can tell, it'll use a charging network. You can plug it in at an Electrify America station. And kind of use it like that.
That's the only issue that I see. I mean, you're right. This is nobody's daily driver.
No.
And it's nobody's car that you're going to take to grandma's house for the holidays. But it could be a car that you go out with your car club in on a nice, you know, day long cruise where you might turn 200 miles. So, that could be a little bit of an issue there, but if it's set up for DC fast charge, you said?
I can't confirm that. I don't know. So those details were not, you know, plentiful just because they are ironing it out. But I imagine with the type of person that's going to buy this, who is wealthy, you'll have a charging setup at the house, of course, and that'll be the predominant way that you charge it. But I do believe that you can use the public charging network because they told us, hey, if we did manage to plow through the range by accident on our shoot day, that's how we would save the car, is we could plug it in at a charge point or something like that.
And hey, you said it, you're wealthy. Buy two. Have the gas one. Have the electric one.
You really can.
You have the gas one for just going out and just enjoying the classic experience with the wind in your hair and the noise and all that. And then you get in the electric one and just humiliate absolutely everybody in your neighborhood that wants to try to race you.
I'm sympathetic to the people who come at this and say, I want nothing to do with this and all that. I hope they watch the video anyway. But
I am too.
To quote Doug, the guy from Superformance, who was so kind in setting all this up for us, he said, you have to get in it to get it. Because he's as old school, hardcore muscle car of a person as you could possibly meet. And even he said, I don't know, like at first. And then he drove it enough to where he said, okay, I think there's something pretty compelling here.
And if it was a case where they said, we're going to stop making the V8 and just offer this electric, that would be different. They're doing both together. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. After my Mach-E experience, I cannot fathom how anybody who claims to love speed and performance would hate on a performance oriented EV. Which let's take that segue to talk a little bit more about the electric version. The video, there are segments in the video, like a couple flyby shots where it's like, okay, you know, they're starting out slow. Holy shit, they're gone. I mean, it was like that quick. I mean, the 0 to 60 is listed as 3 seconds. I mean, does your
that's all a matter of traction. I wish there was sort of a computerized formal traction control for this just to see how fast it could go. Because I really believe it would be in the low twos. You would need something substantial to distribute the torque appropriately. But if you eviscerate those tires and get them warmed up, you have a chance at it. But without any traction control, you can't get the tires to comply.
Now, is it still pretty squirrely at speed, or is it a little bit easier to handle, say, if you punch it from, say, you know, 50 or 60?
This one is valued at money that I shouldn't even say on camera because it's a prototype.
It's a prototype.
So with those, Chris, every week I have a conversation with myself. Don't lose your job. Don't lose your job. So you want to have fun. You have the moments of bliss. And then you figure out how not to lose your job.
Stay away from the donuts.
Yeah. And on public roads, the acceleration bursts were quick in more ways than one. A little bit of throttle and then bring the car back down because you hit triple digits unfathomably quick.
Yeah, I mean, folks, you need to go over to the Motor One, our main Motor One YouTube channel, Motor One Kami on YouTube, to see the video, because the segments that I'm talking about, it's hard to describe. I mean, when I say it's like, okay, they're starting out rolling and then boop, they're gone. I mean, there was the one flyby where it's just like, I mean, it's rare to see acceleration like that on camera. I mean, you'll see a car starting and it's coming towards you. Okay, it's getting faster because it's getting closer to the camera and then it's by. This is just like, you can see it's plain as day how it's getting a lot faster in like no time at all.
Once and the tires are hooked up, it just gathers speed so quickly.
You mentioned this in our chat when we were talking about this video, Smith, but it's also funny that when you compare, you look at the video of them driving the combustion powered version and you watch the video of them driving this version, and this one, it looks so much smoother and more docile isn't the right word, but you're watching the combustion version and the camera's like vibrating.
Was that on purpose?
That's exactly what it was. 100%. You just said it, Bruce. You see that there's not much space to mount cameras in that car, right? Let alone
we're looking at the cockpit now. There's very
so the V8 just shakes you, and we had to recalibrate our mics 4 or 5 times for it to not peak, and even then you could barely hear us talking over that engine. The V8 noise overtakes every other sense in your body as you're driving that car. Is where the EV, you get everything else. You hear rocks hitting the bottom of the car. You hear chassis flex. You actually hear it. and there's just other parts to it that you miss out on in the gas car because that engine is so loud.
Let me ask another question here that's not related to power, but rather balance. Did you notice a clear difference in just the dynamics of the car, how it felt, how it handled in the EV versus the gas? Because I know the Cobras, that's a big engine to have up front. They're cool cars, but they can tend to be a little nose heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first thing that stuck out to me was just no power steering and bitching and complaining about moving it around in a parking lot. But because, you know, once you get up to speed, the no power steering just gives you a completely different outlook on driving that car. But yeah, the the electric motor for the EV is in the back. So the weight distribution has to be dramatically different between the two cars. I'll say that I didn't drive either fast enough around a racetrack or around a corner to truly feel out the nuance differences, but it
probably
quick public road speeds, let's call it that.
I was just going to ask, it's a bit hard to tell in the video. Are the batteries underneath the, I guess what we would call the hood? And then obviously we see the shot of the motor in the trunk. So, okay.
That's right.
There's no skateboard.
There's nothing under your butt. But then you take away all the plumbing of the side exit exhaust and all that stuff too. I think it lends itself to the weight savings. We have no other example of this, right? Where an EV weighs less than a gas car equivalent. That's nuts.
Not yet.
I mean, there's nothing I could think of.
I mean, could you see areas where maybe the EV version, I won't say cut corners, but you know, some things that were there that were neat on the gas version that weren't there on the EV. The first thing I notice is the roll bar behind the driver.
Well, I mean, the thing you have to realize though, dude, this is a prototype. There's one of these. Yeah. They've built however many thousands of the other ones. I don't know.
I think they'll smooth those even things
fair
out
at this point. Yeah. Like,
I'm just nerding out. Come on. It's a freaking Cobra.
I know.
And I think, love the fact that they have an electric one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they tried to keep the gauges similar in the EV. If they could have figured out a way to get rid of that display entirely and make that part all analog, I think that's a home run. Because, you know, there's nothing that you get from the display other than a couple of stats and a couple settings to change around. But if they could make it, you know, like more tactile switches to put the car in drive or reverse, I that'd be the only thing I would change. It seemed weird to me to have like an aftermarket head unit in the car and still have some of the metallic switches next to it. I think it'd be cool just to go completely old school.
Well, let me ask the question that's somewhat answered in the video. And once again, you want to go to Motor One.com, the YouTube channel, to see the video there. Also like and follow there, but you really want to like and follow our podcast channel because Clint is awesome. Doesn't need any help on growing that channel. We need help growing.
Well, that's not true.
Anyways,
say that.
You guys, you sort of did a little bit of a comparison at the end as to maybe not necessarily which one is better, but maybe which one you would have.
Yeah.
What was your conclusion on that, Clint?
I think Brett leaned into the nostalgia side of it more. And for him, you know, he met his childhood hero in that car and it lived up to the expectations. So there was no way that the EV was going to win his heart outright. But for me, because this was knowing that this car is, I mean, we're 5 to 10 years ahead of every single thing we drive being EV, the fact that this came out now, it warmed my enthusiast heart knowing that crap like that is still going to exist when everything is battery powered. It's completely foreign to every other EV on the road, and it feels very special because of it. So I think because that's so unique, there was no way that I could love it any less.
So Clint, it's like you read my mind for this segue, and thank you very much for it. So this You're is welcome. A story we wrote in July, specifically I wrote in July. And this is basically a shout out to Superformance because they're also working on an electric version of their GT40. Superformance,
I'm going to have to go back.
A kit or a replica version of the GT40.
Yeah.
And so they are already working on that. This is from July 15th, 2021. Development is taking place at the former U.S. Air Base in Upper Heyford, England. But you can see it here. That Superformance, that they're kind of, it feels like they can kind of see the future. They understand that there's a point in time where they're going to have electric vehicles, and that they're just hitting the ground running way before any of their competitors. And you look at this and it looks like a GT40, but it's electric. And so it kind of congrats to them that between this and then also their Cobra, that they really seem to be serious about this.
You're just racking up cool points in different ways, right? Like if you have the gas powered one, it speaks for itself. It's going to be the coolest thing in the parking lot. But imagine rolling up to an Electrify America station in your Cobra and plugging it in. You'd blow people's minds, you know? Like you would be like the talk of that charger. And there's a special place for that too.
Hey, dude, I love your Leaf, man. Check out my Cobra.
Yeah, you know? Seriously. Really cool Bolt you got there.
Because I was thinking about leasing a Nissan Leaf because I'm on the electric train. And I think the thing to mention here again, they're electric. You're not getting the sound. You're not going to get the same kind of rumble that you'll feel in these cars, but you're going to get, in my opinion, you're going to get better performance. You're going to have a different kind of performance that no gasoline engine can match. And it's not just about numbers. Having that instant torque, I kind of described it like this. You could have a bonkers V8 supercharged making 2,000 pound-feet of torque. And when you step on the gas, it still requires a small moment for that input to be recognized, another small moment for the extra fuel in the air to get into the cylinder, another extra small moment for it to combust. And then as the revs build, you pass that torque peak. Now you got to do it all over again when the next gear comes around. Electric motor, it's not like that. It's a toggle switch. It's just like, you want to go? Boop. Okay. You go. You want to keep going? Okay, we're just going to keep going. Until you lift off, you're just going to keep going. It's a completely different kind of experience. Yeah. And Superformance, I mean, I think that was a very good thing that you said. You can't really knock it until you get behind the wheel and see what it's all about.
You have to. We talk about us three with our jobs. We talk about EVs every single day, and there's charging curves and range and the practical things that people do care about buying this car. Sometimes that makes us want to hit our head against our desk because it's like, this does a burnout, and it does a burnout without flicking any switches. You literally turn the car on, hit the right pedal, and you will roast the back tires. This is a bona fide badass car, and it also happens to be electric.
Well, I've said it before. I'm insanely jealous that you guys got to do that. So thanks for sharing the experience and bringing all of us along for the ride.
Well, you thank definitely you for talking about it with us.
Oh, yeah. It was just twist my arm. Ow, 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 ow. Go to MotorOne.com because we have an article written up on it, too, as well as the video that's out. Bruce, do we want to take a moment and talk about some comments here?
We do. We had just a few comments last week. So anyone who watched last week's episode, you know, Tim from Cincinnati, he sent us a question. Clint, I don't know if you listened, but basically Tim from Cincinnati, he has an a Z4M Roadster, Honda Accord, and his wife has a SUV of indeterminate make model, and they have two kids. And he was asking us basically what he should do. He wants a 911, a used 911.
Also
he likes his Z4M, but it sounds like he's on the cusp of falling out of love with it. But he's going to do a track day this summer. And he wanted to know, like, what do you do? Especially people like us who, you know, we write about the latest Corvettes or Caymans. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones he mentioned. And it's hard not to want those cars, but also financially,
sure. We
can't afford those cars. Mm-hmm. So Tim was asking for some advice, and we gave it to him. And I'm going to read what he responded with. So I appreciate the time you spent responding to my question. It's awesome that you are doing this from Ohio. He's speaking to me. I grew up in XYZ area, and I'm in Cincinnati now. What I took from you both is to endeavor to try new things. In that spirit, I appreciate the encouragement with the Z4M. It's not an option that I had really considered. That is keeping it. We kind of, Smith suggested, you know, buying kind of a cheap car, fixing it up and having some fun
cheap-ish,
with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suggested, you know, hanging on to the Z4 for a little while and then trading in for a 911, but type stuff of that like that. It's not an option I'd really considered. It may be something that I am now more open to in the future. As for now, a fun replacement for the Accord could be in the cards. The idea of cycling through a few 10 to 15,000 used cars is fascinating, a way for everyday easy fun. I also wonder about a new Civic Si. Any thoughts? Ooh. It would be a pretty close to even trade with the Accord, given where used car prices are right now. Keep up the great work, Tim. So, Tim, thanks for the reply. I hope
very
you have
much.
Fun. Yeah, I hope we helped you a little bit. Clint, you've driven, I know you've driven the SI. Have you driven a current Accord?
Yeah. Yeah, both of them.
Okay, so
Tim, don't worry. Your friend Clint is here for you. The answer to your question is a used Alfa Romeo 4C.
What? What? We like the guy. Come on. Why don't you just tell him to get an RX-8 while you're at it?
Tim, if you have a Z4M that's had an issue or two by now, so you're no stranger to that, you want an Alfa Romeo 4C, because that was one of the first cars I ever fell in love with. And they're actually getting pretty cheap.
They are.
I mean, relative.
Because
I guess
how
like,
unreliable they are. But
yeah, why not? Screw it. It's four-cylinder. It's fun. The DCT in it is fantastic. You have to step over half the car's frame to get inside of it. It is bliss. And you could track it and do all sorts of fun stuff. So if you want something totally impractical, Alfa 4C. That's the dumb part of me answering. The real part of me who drove a Civic Si last week for almost 1,000 miles,
we ended up putting on
the clock. We drove it everywhere. It was the most miles I've put in a car in a very long time, which is telling because I had to drive it in LA traffic with a damn 6-speed, you know?
Yeah.
The car is fantastic. It's truly, it might be the best car for under 30 grand as an enthusiast. There are some parts of it that are not as nice as the inside of the Accord. I'm personally upset with Honda that they took out the heated seats and some of the other like nice creature comforts. Which
you're
just
in
seemed...
LA, you don't need heated seats.
I used heated sometimes seats when I lived in Miami.
Sometimes it gets below 60. Come on.
Did you hear him? He said he used heated seats in Miami.
We end up talking about my horrible personality traits every time I'm on this podcast. But one of them...
You're using heated seats in Miami, Florida. That's...
Dude, I went out to go put something in the car right now, and I think it's 65 outside. I put on a sweatshirt before I walked out of the house. Like, I have problems.
God. It's 30 degrees, and I've got a window open.
The brisk, the rough winters of Southern California get me. The Civic Si is
Civic
great.
Civic Si versus Accord, yeah.
Does it look better in person? Because I haven't seen it yet in person. I think it looks kind of plain for being something that's supposed to be a little sporty.
I've been indoctrinated in this car for the last few weeks. We also busted our butt and did a huge video review on that. So I'm also going to plug that if anybody would head over to the Moto One channel and watch that. It's one of our recent uploads. But
yeah,
the regular Civic sedan looks quite plain to me. I think they dressed up the Si in a lot of good ways. There's some colors that are specific to it. There's 18-inch matte black wheels, which look fantastic. They took the honeycomb pattern from the front of the Civic hatch and moved it to the Si. Dual exhaust outlets, black mirrors. They made it look nice. I guess my only question for Tim with the more practical daily is, do you want to drive a manual every day? Because Si, you only get one option.
I mean, how does it do if you have to carry people? You know, it's a Civic versus an Accord. It's going to be a little bit smaller, but
yeah,
does it still function pretty good?
Super practical. I mean, it's a full size sedan of, you know, like you just said, it's going to be smaller than an Accord, but huge trunk space, really nicely done back seat. You're not missing out on a bunch there. Like I said, a few creature comforts, but the Civic also has the next generation interior for Hondas that the Accord doesn't even have. It's the latest in infotainment, and the design of that interior is next gen for Hondas going forward. So it's actually leading in some respects.
All right, Tim, if your kiddos are on the tiny-ish side...
Alfa 4C, Tim. Alpha 4C.
Well, if we're going to go that route, I mean, let's recommend a 996 911 and a Jag XDS.
That's what he wants. He wants a 996 911.
Tim, you can't get a 911 because then you're like everybody else who got a 911. You want an Alfa 4C.
There aren't that many 911s there. This isn't SoCal or Miami.
Oh, how many Alfa 4Cs are in Ohio, Chris?
None.
Exactly, Tim. Alfa 4C.
Okay.
There you go, folks. Send your requests, send your comments, send your opinions to podcast@motorone.com. Well, you can also always comment on our article. I got to do the boilerplate, Bruce. Let me finish. You can always go to motorone.com to our article there. You can comment there. We want you to comment there. We want you to go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube, like, subscribe, and comment there. Now we can move on.
For the first time ever, an automaker commented on one of our videos.
Oh, and that's right. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
No.
It was a friendly comment.
It was friendly, and it was very fun, and I have my own fun response to it. So this is from the folks at Hennessy Performance. You might remember last week we talked about the Hennessy Project Deep Space, and we said it might not ever happen, but we were nice to them. Like, we said it looked like something out of anime, and their response was, I've never heard of this anime.
Anime.
So, yes.
Yeah.
But maybe we should start watching it. Thanks for the coverage. So, Hennessy, I'll tell you what. Smith and I will sell you our consulting services. We will show you the best anime cars ever, as long as you pay us. That's it.
That's very true. And I tell you what. You probably think we're kidding. We're not. Let me tell you why.
No, because that's a real comment.
The anime. No. I'm talking about Bruce's offer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Here's why you want to pay us. Because if you're going to dip a toe into the world of anime, that could be a really, really scary, frightening place. Especially for a car designer, because you're going to see ideas. You're going to see things. And honestly, Hennessy, you got like shockingly close to an anime car with your Project Deep Space with,
you know,
the 6-wheel drive. Man. And I mean, it's and the way, you know, maybe it sounds like we're being a little mocking here, but you know what? You know who's going to take us to space? All the people that are into the anime that want to travel through space, that follow all of these different programs that are based in the future. So Hennessy, you can take us into the future with a little bit of help from anime, and Bruce and I can guide you on that journey. It's a partnership that needs to happen.
Every week we have people tell us that we're in the pocket of an automaker and taking money from them, and you people are making this worse now. We take no money from automakers, even if it's for anime suggestions.
He's right. You're right in a technical way. But also, Smith, I showed you the anime, I'm pretty sure. Not that they cribbed it from, but it's very similar. The front wheel, the two front wheels are in the front. There's one in the back.
I can think of a half a dozen cars from various programs that that are a very close match.
Exactly.
And of course, we don't take money from automakers. No. But Hennessy, you can email
even
us.
Even our good friends in Texas.
Yeah. But Hennessy, thank you for the comment.
Again, thanks for the comment.
The first automaker who has ever commented on our show. I love it, and I love your anime, or however you want to say it, because that was adorable, so thanks so much.
Very good. Well played. Now let's talk about some retro stuff.
Yeah, let's do that while I close.
Because we haven't been talking about like classic, you know, one of the greatest 60s muscle car performance cars of all time, right? Actually, well,
it's a good segue, though.
Do you want to start there? Let's start there, because Ford, back in the early 2000s, they had a Shelby Cobra concept.
Yes, they did. I remember.
And
that.
let me bring a photo up of that right now, just so we have some comparison here.
So let me vamp a second while you're doing that. So this, as you know, or our listeners know, starting for December, starting last week and for the rest of December, we are using our listener ideas from the past and new ones, if you got a good one, for our second segment. Suggestions. That's a hard thing to say. Last week we talked about some stuff, and this week I believe it was Josiah. I looked for your comment, I couldn't find it, but basically comparing kind of the original design versus the design that is the modernization of that look.
The modern kind of retro design versus the original design.
Exactly.
So it's a great thing to explore. We're going to explore that a little bit right now.
Yep.
And we're going to start with the Shelby Cobra concept. I don't have the year right in front of me. I think it was 2002, 2003, but we're looking at it now.
I was thinking 03, but I'll look it up
on YouTube. That's the concept car. I remember when it first came out, there was some pretty good talk back in the day that, that would be neat if that could come back. This was at a time before Shelby and Ford kind of made up. Because
we were both wrong. It's 04. We were slightly off.
Okay. Slightly off. I'll take that.
I thought it was 03 too.
That car looks like it just saw Smith put down a strawberry jalapeno popper.
That car looks like...
It looks terrified.
Like Smith's office after eating a dozen of those jalapeno poppers.
It looks legitimately scared. And like a worse Cadillac XLR.
Well,
no,
here's
it
the thing.
Doesn't.
I remember...
Back.
Look at the side of it.
Bruce, he's not wrong. I remember when this came out thinking, this is cool as hell. I hope they make it. And now looking back, I'm like, God, I'm glad they didn't.
This is terrible.
Because it looks like the V6 version. That's what it looks like.
Can I say that, considering how good the second gen Ford GT came out as a tribute car, this is garbage by comparison.
Yeah, I'm so glad they didn't do it.
A slightly different angle. Very slightly different. But more
the angle is not the problem, sir.
No, it looks worse than that angle.
Now it's a Chrysler Crossfire.
Crossfire.
That's what I was thinking.
They tried to capture the Cobra's really long bonnet, right, with the really short rear deck. And they do that, but they do it without any sort of excitement. I mean, it's just like, let's just do this as generic as possible.
It's somehow very sterile. Somehow it's not good, but it's weird. I remember the same thing. I remember loving this thing when it was new. 2004, I would have been a senior in high school. And I remember thinking this thing looks so hot. And I look at it now and it's just like, thank God you didn't build
this. Retro craze was hitting hard. I mean, Ford had the Thunderbird, which I would like to bring up here in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get there.
But just to make sure we're all transitioning here on a happy note, there's the original Cobra design.
Thank you for that.
That we're looking at right now.
And I remember that car looking so much better. Not this one. This looks fantastic. I mean, the concept.
What?
No.
The concept. Yeah, boy, I'm glad that thing didn't go through. And really, in my mind, the Viper, even though it was Dodge, it wasn't Ford, the Viper, that OG Viper, just embodied everything that the Cobra was, including the style, and they did it with a modern look. Ford's concept was just extraordinarily generic. So, Bruce, do you got anything you want to bring up here?
I've got several. I tried to keep it. Well, I guess this first one actually isn't a production vehicle, but I'm going to have two vehicles here. And this is a shout out to what Hyundai has been doing for about the past 2 years now. And this is the Hyundai Grandeur concept from just a few months ago now, actually. Give me just a second. And so this is an EV that looks straight out of the 1980s. They did very little to it. I will show you the original here in just a moment. Basically, the only thing that's different is the headlights and some of the body cladding.
They took the Ioniq 5 taillights and put them in the little, pixelated ones.
Cool. I'm 99% sure you're right. Yeah. I love the crushed velvet or velour interior.
I mean, when I see that, I'm thinking like 1982 Ford Fairmont.
You're not
just an 82 Ford Fairmont that had that really boxy look to it.
Yeah, there's their pixelated
all the way around. I dig this thing. I shouldn't. I don't think it looks particularly good. I'm not excited about
the interior. Is cool. I think they took Ioniq 5 elements and put it inside too, if I'm not wrong.
I mean, nobody else is pulling from like the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, maybe there's a reason for that.
Well, here's the original. You can see how similar it is. They basically just changed out the headlights. It's an interesting idea of doing retro modern. And this isn't the first time. So we saw, I'm going to show you the Hyundai Pony concept. Oh, this is also, for some reason, I thought it was from 2020. This is from April 2021. Just a second while I get my share screen stuff up here. So here is the Pony concept. It's exactly the same idea that you take an old vehicle, you shove an EV into it, and you kind of do this retro modern thing. And Hyundai has kind of gotten in on this recently. So here is the concept. And let me swap over here.
I mean, should we be revisiting designs from the 70s and 80s?
Well, they're not going to sell them if they're just doing it for fun.
But there's a part of me that says, maybe it's time. Maybe people are ready to step into that nostalgia. I mean, as people my age getting along in years and you have more disposable income, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to having that Hyundai concept if they were to make something like that. I can't explain it, but
Clint, did you happen to prepare any for this, or is it just going to be Smith and I? Because I've got several more. We can go for this for a while.
I'm here to comment. I'm sorry. I thought I came here ready to judge. I didn't come to the table with any, but I'm happy to pick them apart as you present them.
Oh, well, well, let's do that.
In that case, yes. Oh, yes. I have one. Let's start out here with the car that I absolutely love. How about the original BMW 6 Series?
Oh, God, yes. It's fantastic.
That's such a gorgeous car. It's such a timeless car. And for listeners that have been with us for a little while, you might recall I've said a few times I was a huge fan of the TV show Moonlighting in the 1980s, and Sybil Shepherd's character drove a 635 CSI. So I'm sure that has a little bit to do with my love of this car. I think it just looks fantastic. And then when BMW came out with their newer 6 Series, I mean, this is like a generation after.
Yeah, there's the Bangle one before this.
Yeah, the Bangle one I didn't even include because it just kind of disgusts me.
I love that car.
This is not better.
I can't remember the specific designation for this. F12, or I can't remember that designation, but it's probably the best looking of the newer newer 6 Series cars. And I was asking myself, okay, why do I love the original so much but don't like the new one?
I don't think you're doing a fair job. What about the new 8 Series? That looks fantastic.
Right.
But the 8 series isn't a 6 series, is it?
Okay. All right. Based on that, you win.
I mean, because I thought about it too. I like the 8 series, but then if I compared it to, and I thought about doing that, comparing it to the original 8 series with the pop-up headlights. I mean, that holds a special place in my heart too, but I think I'd rather have the newer 8 series. Now, for this, I mean, when you look at the newer 6 series versus the classic, the first thing that sticks out to me, I mean, look at the greenhouse. Mm. Look how much larger the windows are. It just feels like it's all cockpit almost, with just kind of the graceful sloping bonnet and the backside that slopes down. I think that's a big deal because the newer ones, it's all about just like kind of hiking it up in the back. You know, there's junk in the trunk that shouldn't be there. And other than that, I mean, I hate to say, because when we look at the original 6, I mean, that's not a super flashy car, but the newer one just looks like a GTO. It has a real anonymous, you know, the new Pontiac GTO. Yeah. It just has a real anonymous kind of flavor about it. I mean, am I wrong?
And that's the M6. Do you guys like? Too.
Yeah. This is the M6 that we're looking at, which I mean, it's a phenomenal performance car, and it's not bad. But it just makes me sad that it's a newer take on that original 6, and it just lost all the magic. It just lost all the magic.
So here, let me show you. I can tell you what it's missing right now, and it's honestly, I know why. It's because of pedestrian safety rules in Europe. And that is the fact that the original has this shark nose grill that is, you can see it points out farther at the very top than it does lower down. This one has a fascia added onto it and a bumper, but you can see that the leading edge is that little bit of the nose, and it just makes it look like it's kind of like biting into the air.
It's true.
You're absolutely right. And maybe it's a sign of the times. You can't do that anymore just for
safety.
I bet you could find a way to incorporate that in the style if you really wanted to.
So I got to go with the car I feel like started the retro modern trend. Maybe there were some concepts, but in terms of production, I don't remember one that's before this. And that's the Volkswagen New Beetle.
Oh, yep. Lord.
It came out in the late 90s. Say what you will. I do remember the hot rich girl who was like a senior when I was a freshman in high school. Her parents owned a golf course, had this car, literally yellow. She had this car. Like, this thing was huge at the time.
Did they also own a fire engine? Or?
They did not own a fire engine. That they just didn't. It's sad. But yeah, like this thing was huge at the time. And it's the first one of these retro modern designs that I can remember. And just for anyone who doesn't remember those days or weren't around in those days. So this is the production version. This is the concept from 2 years before that. And you can see they didn't have to do much to it.
You know, the thing I remember about that is
right here.
Isn't really the styling so much. It's that it came with a little vase in the middle that you could put a little flower.
That's right, a little flower. Yeah.
You could put a little flower in there. I was just really starting to get into the car scene at that point, and it just made me gag. And I'd always been a Beatle fan. It just felt like such a gimmick. And of course, that's because it was.
But you said
the math
concept
teacher who had one, and it was the mattish green, and the license plate said guacamole.
Oh,
and
God.
she had pens just like this that she would keep in the flower holster.
Guacamole. I mean, that all of that said, I don't not like it. I mean, I don't think I really like it, but I mean, I don't think it's terrible. And the turbo models, those were actually pretty lively little cars.
Oh yeah, it was essentially a GTI. Like there wasn't much difference. It was the same platform. It was the same engine. It was basically a GTI, just with different skin on it.
And now we're looking at the original Beetle.
We're looking at an original with a split rear glass. But it was. Like, can either of you guys think of an earlier example of the retro modern thing of taking a retro design, updating it, and actually putting it on sale? Because I know there was,
I think,
some,
the Beetle
Dodge
went on
concepts
sale like in 2000 or so. So it really did kick off.
98 was the first one. So, yeah.
I mean, I guess you could say Ford, when they came out with the SN95 Mustang in 94, they were really digging hard for a retro vibe, but they still had the Fox platform that they were working with. So they brought the side scoops back.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of had the proportions just set up a little different. I wouldn't call it retro, but they were definitely aiming towards more of a retro theme from the Fox that had like absolutely nothing to do with the original car. So there was that going on there.
Nissan Z?
The 350. The 350.
That was later.
Later, yeah.
Yeah, the 350 didn't come out until what?
02?
01 or 02, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's right there, kind of at the cusp of the retro game.
Hummer H2?
That was way later.
Was it?
Well, yeah. What was it? What was it retroing? The H1?
Sure. I'm making shit up now.
Gotcha.
It was kind of the first one to actually put it into production. Like I said, I know there were some Dodges concepts off the top of my head that did it beforehand, but they never
there was. Well, I guess on that token, maybe you could say the Viper, because that was 92 and the Viper was really pulling hard on the Cobra. I mean, right down to where they had Carroll Shelby involved.
That's true. Mm. Okay.
So an argument could be made there for the Viper. Then, of course, you had Dodge with the or Chrysler with the PT Cruiser. That was
about the same time.
Everybody hates the PT Cruiser, but
Clint, I don't hate it.
You're from Ohio. That's an Ohio car.
Those things were everywhere.
Dude, it wasn't Ohio. They were everywhere.
In the Midwest.
I almost bought a PT
Turbo.
It's a large
part of the country.
Well, since we're talking about that era, let me jump in here with my take on what I mentioned earlier, Thunderbird. Because I had the special opportunity of growing up and becoming, you know, reaching driver age with a 57 Thunderbird, which is what we see here. This isn't the one that my family had. That's actually what they call an F Bird. That had a supercharger on it. Those were like 300 horsepower.
That's right. Yeah.
And the original, the 55 to 57 Thunderbird, obviously it's an iconic car. That car was built directly to compete with Corvette.
I thought it was the other way around.
No, because Corvette came out in 53.
Right.
And then this came out 55 with
V8
power.
It outsold the Corvette. because the Corvette didn't have a V8 at, or it had it in 55, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the exact sales figures, but I mean, this was a Corvette competitor. Mm-hmm. And then Ford realized, okay, well, if we build a bigger four-seater version, more people are going to want it. The purists were upset, but Ford was like, yeah, sorry, I can't hear you over all of this money we're making.
Right.
So this car kind of became an icon, right? And I drove a 57 Thunderbird, phenomenal to drive. It had the 312 V8. It had plenty of power even without the supercharger. Just a joy. It's one of those cars you literally feel like you're sitting in the middle of the mm-hmm. car and you're just kind of surrounded by stuff. Wonderful car. And then Ford came out with their retro Thunderbird in 2002, I think.
That sounds right.
And I mean, the retro craze was in full force. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all we're doing is trashing on the newer versions of the classic cars here. But this was just, it was like retro too far.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, at the time, I remember the PT Cruiser. I know a lot of people don't like it now, but at the time, the PT Cruiser was hot, man. I mean, like, people were paying over sticker because they wanted to have one now. It was that hot. And it was because it's just like it was retro done right. Everything was kind of balanced. With this car, Ford, they were trying to stick with their what they call their reverse wedge, where the back of the car actually points harder and sharper instead of the front, which is why it looks kind of awkward. But it's like what Ford failed to realize. Yeah, the original did that too, but it also had these little wings on the side. You know, it had the fins that yeah. kind of offset that gave it, you know, decent proportions. And then the new one didn't. And I think if it wasn't for that, I think the reborn Thunderbird would have been a little bit better. But it was also, I think it was on the Lincoln platform, the Mark 8 platform. It had V8 power, but it wasn't particularly fast. It was heavy. Mm-hmm. It was cushy, so it didn't really work that great as a fun little sports car. It was just kind of like a big, cushy two-seat cruiser. What they should have done was revamped it into a Corvette fighter like it was originally. That would have been cool as hell. But yeah, that's one of my all-time, I wanted it to be so much more, and then I was just really disappointed automotive moments, because I'm a big Thunderbird fan.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear what you guys think. Yeah, is it just me on the new Thunderbird? I mean, it only lasted a few years, obviously.
No, it was a failure. You're right. It went too retro, and it didn't have the performance. I think if you had a crystal ball, if it could have been faster than even a base Corvette at the time in a straight line, that could have been something. Because, you know, an American car like that, and especially with those looks, you're never going to appeal to a young person. But if you could get a 50-year-old guy who kind of had some memories of the original and then say, oh, it's quicker in a straight line than a Corvette, screw how it handles, you might have had something, but they just didn't.
And apologies to my mother-in-law, if you're listening.
She has one?
No, but she absolutely loves the new Thunderbird, you know, when they brought it back. Wow. So, I mean, the good news is, because most people don't like them, they can go for pretty cheap, and I'll buy you one sooner or later here.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry for her when that day happened.
Oh, my God,
Clint. I don't want to dedicate any more thoughts to that Thunderbird, and please, for the love of God, get it off the screen sometime soon. But I think that retro can be done right. Bronco, Nissan Z.
It absolutely can be done.
There are
right.
lots of examples that we could go through another hour of really cool retro versions of old cars.
I mean, I can bring up something right now if you want, unless you got something ready to go, Bruce.
I do. So we're at, let's do 3 minutes each.
Okay.
We'll do the timer thing. Yeah. So you go first, then I'll go.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think we got to talk about Camaro. I think there's no reason to not talk about Camaro, because the original, I think, looked great in my eyes. I love the car. I love the Camaro. If I had a choice of cars from back in that era, it probably wouldn't be Camaro. It probably wouldn't even be Mustang. It would probably be like a Challenger or a Charger, if I'm honest, because I just absolutely love those cars from the late 60s. But I love the new Camaro.
You went one more generation than I thought. I was thinking before that.
Yeah, this is the current generation Camaro. Right.
Which has a dumb bar that goes across the middle of the grill.
That's the reason. No, it looks better. It looks better. It actually separates the grill. It gives it a nice presence, I think. The previous one, you know, the pre-facelift where it was just wide open. Oh, that was just terrible. But aside from the really tiny greenhouse that you can't see out of. I think the new Camaro is fantastic. And I'm so sad that the sales just aren't there for it.
They haven't given it any love in the last few years. I mean, we're hearing it might get a ZL1 send-off, which will be really cool. But
yeah, like a 1 or 2 year model.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you say they're not giving it any love, I mean, that's not going to boost sales. It's just like it's just being swept under the rug. You know, we're not going to really do anything interesting for the lower trims. You know, it's just, it is what it is. You know, hey, check out our Blazer. No, I don't want to check out your Chevy Blazer. That's a dumb crossover. I want to check out the Camaro more. I think all of the modern Camaros from when they originally brought it back here look fantastic. The previous generation that you guys were talking about, I think that's the worst of them all.
Oh no.
I think it's great.
I think it's better.
I don't know that this one is the absolute best, but I wanted to have something absolutely modern from today to compare to. I would take the new Camaro over the classic one. And that's not saying that the classic Camaro is terrible. I think it looks fantastic. It has just awesome street cred, nice muscular presence. But I think Chevrolet did the classic justice with their.
So here's the one I thought you were going to talk about, which is the generation before the current one. I think it nailed it. I still do. And Clint, you're right. The greenhouse is way too small. It's way too small. You can't see anything. But aesthetically, for that era, they did it right.
Everything. I mean,
That's the best looking in the modern ones. I agree.
It doesn't look bad, but it gives me a little bit of the Shelby Cobra concept vibe that we were talking about earlier. It's a little plain, I think, in a lot of areas. There just isn't that much character to it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it doesn't look bad.
You're the guy that just put a Thunderbird on the screen and made me look at.
Yeah, that's right. And I pointed out how terrible it was because I'm clever like that. So, also, I have two eyes.
I'm going to end this show with some self-promotion because I'm a hack like that. So the new Volkswagen ID Buzz is going to be coming out next year in Europe and then 2023 in the United States. And finally, and yes, I wrote this story and that's why. Yes. I'm saying it's meaning a self-promotion. We are getting a retro Volkswagen Type 2 transporter, microbus, whatever you want to call it.
Kinda.
Look, here is the concept for that. Here is what we're getting. At least we're getting something. It is clearly retro inspired. There's no way you can fight me on that.
Mm-hmm.
Interior here, we're looking at it. It's basically an ID4 interior.
Right.
In fact, the image that we're looking at, this spy shot shows an ID4 on the infotainment screen because it's a development vehicle. So it's so close to an ID4. They just put an ID4 on there. So it just shows that the retro revisions and retro reimaginings aren't dead. And in fact, there are more on the way. And so for anyone looking at this, I will just throw up a modern, or I guess a retro Type 2. Hold on one second.
So nobody knows what the old buses look like.
Oh no, no one's ever seen one.
They look like kind of a what's the word I'm looking for? A rectangle.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I want to say no. There is nothing else. It's just a rectangle.
Well, here.
Just a nice boxy rectangle. Some of them have a rectangle with a slightly higher roof than others.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yep. There we're looking at it now. It's a rectangle. Yeah. I never got into these are cool. I'm fine with it. But I never got into the bus craze like some people I know.
And I agree with you. But we can't debate the fact that Volkswagen's clearly bringing that design back. They looked at this design and said, somebody wants it and they're bringing it back.
Yeah, but the new one, I don't think the front is flat enough. It's not rectangle enough.
Well, you can't because of crash stuff, because your legs are in front of the front axle in this thing. So if there's an accident, you are going to break everything. And in a modern world, you can't do that.
Picky.
I'm not picky. Volkswagen's picky. Hey, if you want to lose your legs, more power to you.
That's the way we did it in the old days, damn it. We'd pick up our leg, we wrap it in some duct tape, and we get to work.
Legs are for losers.
We are at an hour and 15 minutes, so let's wrap this thing up. Clint, thank you for joining us. Thank you for making the Cobra video. It was fantastic.
Outstanding.
Where can people follow you, and where can people follow what you make?
We make all sorts of fun videos at Motor One US on YouTube. And of course, you can see all the things that the guys write on MotorOne.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Clint Simone, first name, last name. You guys are always fun and I think more delusional than ever.
That's
fair. I think that's a fair assessment. And you definitely want to follow Clint on Twitter because he has all kinds of fast food advice that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Yep. That's a different podcast where we just do
Del
food
Taco
takes.
Information. Clint is the man to listen to.
You can follow me on Twitter at CH Writing. Bruce?
I'm at Chris Bruce 1985 altogether. And as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate every listener we get, every comment we get. We love seeing them. We love making this show, and we're closing in on 1 year making this show. I think this is episode 49, so we're
49.
Like 3 weeks out from 52, and that'll be 1 year. So we appreciate it, guys. And with that, good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
See ya.